It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here, high atop beautiful Signal Hill in Kodiak, Alaska, where it is sunny and 72 degrees. They are showing 74 degrees out at the airport, which blazes right through the record high for this date, which was 67. Coming up on the Midday Report, a mask-burning ceremony for Andy Tuber was held in Kodiak over the weekend. The contract to upgrade Muranoff Park was awarded to a local contractor. And the filing deadline for statewide elections was last Friday. That plus an update on the celebration, which celebrates the survival of Lingit, Haida, and Shmishian cultures. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden scheduled to address the nation tonight about the recent series of mass shootings across the United States. The Gun Violence Archive reports that more than 200 mass shootings involving four or more people have occurred this year alone. One of the latest happening in Oklahoma. Police in Tulsa say the man who shot four people, then himself, at a hospital building yesterday was a disgruntled patient of one of his victims. Chris Polanski of member station KWGS has details.
Tulsa Police Chief Wendell Franklin said the shooter, 45-year-old Michael Lewis, was targeting a surgeon who recently operated on his back. That surgeon, another doctor, a receptionist, and a patient were all killed. Franklin says Lewis bought the semi-automatic handgun and AR-15-style rifle he used in the killings on Sunday and just before the shooting yesterday, respectively.
The information that we have at the current time is that they were legally purchased firearms. One purchased an hour and some change before the actual shooting event took place, and the other purchased 3 days before the shooting took place.
Franklin said the shooter took his own life as officers approached. For NPR News, I'm Chris Polanski in Tulsa.
The 18-year-old man accused of killing 10 black people at a Buffalo grocery store has entered a not guilty plea on charges of domestic terrorism and first-degree murder. The charges stem from the shooting at a Tops grocery store in a predominantly black neighborhood in Buffalo last month. The domestic terrorism charge accuses Peyton Gendron of killing, quote, because of the perceived race and or color of his victims. He is being held without bail. Funerals continue in Texas for more of the 19 children and two teachers shot dead last week by 18-year-old Salvador Ramos. NPR's Laurel Wamsley has more from Uvalde.
On this day, three of those killed in their classrooms are laid to rest in Uvalde, where the shooting has left residents in grief and anger. Eliana Torres was 10 years old. She was both silly and nurturing, her family says. She loved to play softball and make people laugh. Nevea Alyssa Bravo had the same birthday as Eliana. She is survived by two brothers and a sister, as well as her parents. Miranda Gail Mathis had just turned 11. Her family says she was a smart and shy tomboy who loved unicorns and mermaids. 80 miles east in San Antonio, hospitals continue to treat five people wounded in the shooting. Laurel Wamsley, NPR News, Uvalde.
The White House coordinator on COVID-19 response says vaccines may become available as soon as the end of this month. For children 6 months to 5 years of age, Dr. Ashish Jha says advisors to the FDA will be meeting within weeks to decide whether to recommend the shots for younger kids. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes up 435 points, ending at 33,248. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A mask-burning ceremony was held in Kodiak over the weekend for former Kodiak Area Native Association Chief Executive Andy Tuber. The event marks more than a year since his helicopter crashed into the Gulf of Alaska. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports the traditional Sukpiak ceremony marks the end of mourning.
Andy Tuber went missing more than a year ago. The 52-year-old CEO of Canna was piloting a helicopter to Kodiak from Anchorage and is believed by the National Transportation Safety Board to have crashed due to inclement weather in the ocean waters north of Afognak Island. Friends, family, and colleagues gathered on a small hill on Near Island to remember him on Saturday in a traditional Sukpiak mask-burning ceremony. Attendees have the opportunity to speak with the mask, which is made by an artist and represents the deceased. They share final messages that they may not have had the opportunity to say. According to Lauren Anderson, who presided over the ceremony, the ritual serves to mark an end to the period of mourning.
It weighs on people that maybe they got an argument in the morning and never got to say, I love you one last time or goodbye. But the mask ceremony, what it does is it allows you to have that last moment.
According to Anderson, when the mask is burned, it carries what it saw and heard back to that person. The mask burning is not meant to replace a funeral and typically is held months after one's passing, up to years later. Tuber's mask was painted red, white, and black with a semicircle of feathers around its perimeter, and a pearlescent moon with stars was carved into its backboard. As part of the ceremony, the Imamsuat Sukpiak dancers gathered around a fire. One dancer donned the mask as Anderson chanted a prayer for Tuber. After a few minutes, the dance ended, and the mask was handed to Tuber's daughters. They lay their father's mask into the flames. Attendees stood watching it burn for several minutes, while the unrelenting sun hung above. The mask slowly was consumed by the flames. Once it was no longer distinct from the other logs, there were a few quiet hugs. And slowly, silently, the attendees made their way down the hill. Some Native communities that practice mask burning prohibit the photographing of their ceremonial masks. According to Anderson, this is not the case for the Sukpiak people. With his permission, KMXT is publishing photos of the mask on kmxt.org. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
The planned overhaul of the recreation facilities at Baranoff Park got one step closer last week. Kodiak City Council unanimously approved a bid from Kodiak-based Friend Contractors for nearly $5 million for the project. Gerald Friend is the company's owner.
Our crew is very excited about it. We're going to give the community something they can be very, very, very proud of. We will go above and beyond.
Planned upgrades to Baranoff Park include new bathrooms, changing rooms, and an indoor walking track. The ice rink will also be enclosed as part of the project. The fundraising group Friends of Baranoff Park secured more than half the project's price tag through grants and private donations. There's no date yet to break ground. Kodiak City Council members also unanimously voted to amend its contract with AIM Maintenance. That's the company that will be installing public toilets throughout the city. The new contract stipulates that a fourth toilet will be installed in front of the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. It was originally slated to be one of two toilets installed at Pier 2. It's been 40 years since the first celebration, which was hosted to celebrate the survival of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures. This year, the theme is Celebration 2022, celebrating 10,000 years of cultural survival. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is the host of the event. After 2 years in a pandemic, the term survival means even more, says President Kahani Rosita Worrell.
We saw how it was affecting our elders, and so the elders became, you know, kind of a symbol, a critical symbol for us, you know, the survival of our culture.
Juneau's COVID-19 case rate has risen in the last 2 weeks, and the city and borough of Juneau no longer manage health risks related due to the pandemic. World said that this is something that they've anticipated since deciding back in January to host the celebration in person.
We're monitoring those numbers very closely.
To limit spread during the events, all staff will be tested daily, temperatures will be taken at the door of each event, and masks will be required and enforced by moderators. President Worrell says she's expecting around 3,000 people to attend Celebration. The celebration has become a vital event for Southeast Alaska Native communities to connect.
Over 40 years, it now is significant for us to gather together to celebrate our culture. But you put that on top of all of these other events where we were not able to gather, and it becomes really important.
Celebration takes place in Juneau, June 8th through 11th. Alaska has crowded statewide elections this year, with at least 10 people running for governor, 20 for the U.S. Senate, and 31 candidates running for the new U.S. House term that starts in January. Wednesday was the candidate filing deadline at the Division of Elections. With new district boundaries, the legislative races carried a greater degree of uncertainty this year. One of the last to file paperwork in the Anchorage office of the Division of Elections was Representative Matt Klayman, a Democrat now running for the state Senate. He said he filed at the last minute because he was trying to coordinate with other candidates.
I didn't want to not run for my state house seat without confidence that there was a good candidate running to take my seat in the state house.
Klayman is challenging incumbent Republican Mia Costello. Elections clerk Deborah Moody Herrera took note as the clock ticked toward 5 p.m.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, that's it.
With the filing deadline reached, she shut off the light and locked the office door. The primary election is August 16th. The top four candidates in each race will advance to the November election. Most of the legislative races have four or fewer competitors, so the primary will serve mainly to trim the list of statewide candidates. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough School Board is considering amending its athletic policy to prevent transgender girls from competing on girls' sports teams. Under the proposal, introduced by the board's policy committee, students' eligibility to play on boys' or girls' teams would depend on their gender assigned at birth. If a transgender girl wanted to play a sport, she could only play on a boys' team or co-ed team. School board president Ryan Ponder is one of the three board members who recommended the change. He read from the proposal at a school board meeting on Wednesday night.
The goal of this proposed policy is to ensure discrimination against girls and women does not occur, that they are treated fairly and not disadvantaged in athletic programs compared to male body athletes.
Several school board members expressed support for the policy. Member Jubilee Underwood says her son plays basketball in the district and that she thought most parents would support the proposed policy. One parent who didn't agree was Robin Moffitt. She has four kids in the district and told the board that including trans students in sports is important for their mental health.
If this ban passes, it tells trans youth, athletes and non-athletes, out or closeted, that the adult leaders in this community are not safe and cannot be trusted. That distrust and fear will lead to more suicide, more self-harm, more violence for these already vulnerable youth.
Board member Dwight Probosco questioned the legality of the policy. He asked for clarification from the district's attorneys about whether the policy would be considered discriminatory.
You know, we talk about A-level playing field. That's singular. And this mentions girls and women's. Where's our fields for our trans children? And what would they look like?
The school board will vote on the policy at its next meeting on June 15th. Just before the end of the legislative session, state senators voted to table a bill that would have enacted similar restrictions statewide. The Akiyuk Memorial School in Klasigluk will be ready to open for classes in the fall after multiple school facilities burned down last week. That's according to Lower Kuskokwim School District Superintendent Kimberly Hankins. Hankins visited the school the day after the fire. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur spoke with Hankins about how the school district is responding.
The most immediate concern is restoring power and water to the campus after the fire destroyed the school's utility building. The fire also wiped out the old utility building, which was vacant, and the housing used for the school principal. Superintendent Hankins says she hopes the school district will be able to restore power in the coming days, and it is assessing how to restore water.
Because those are the critical elements that really need to be in place for us to open the school in the fall.
No summer school activities were planned, so the fire is not causing any disruptions there. With all the buildings on the school campus clustered so closely together, Hankins says it's remarkable that the school appears unscathed.
Considering how large the fire was, it's just absolutely incredible that the school is intact and that we're just really fortunate.
The fire occurred last Thursday. Hankins visited the site on Friday.
There was a lot of charred debris. Fire hoses were strewn across the ground.
While in Akiyuk, Hankins met with several of the volunteers who had quickly responded to contain the fire. She learned how they worked together to keep the flames from spreading to the school and the other teacher housing.
I have gratitude for all the folks from Akiyuk, Agula, Nunap, and Atmau, who assisted with the fire response. I feel grateful to the Division of Forestry for sending the tankers and personnel, and for our staff here at the district office from plant facilities and their quick response in notifying state agencies and really reaching out to alert folks of the fire.
Inside the school, Hankins said she could strongly smell smoke in the kitchen and gym. Both are near the buildings that burned. Other than minor smoke damage, Hankins says the school appears untouched, but further investigation could uncover deeper issues. A fire inspector with the state troopers inspected the campus the day of the fire. A fire investigator with the school district's insurance company will travel to the campus next week. The district plans to use the insurance to pay for damages and cleanup. The cause of the fire has not been released. As far as the destroyed buildings, the cleanup timeline is still unknown. Hankins says part of that will depend on if the debris is determined to contain contaminants such as asbestos that will require special attention. For KYUK, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
A Sitka grand jury indicted two men this spring on a variety of weapons and drug charges. One defendant remains in custody pending $125,000 bail. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
The grand jury indicted 44-year-old William Scott Noel on April 14th on three counts of misconduct involving a controlled substance and three counts of misconduct involving weapons. According to court records, Sitka police were summoned to the Rocky Gutierrez Airport on March 18th by Transportation Security Administration officers and shown luggage allegedly belonging to Noel that contained an undeclared Springfield Armory 1911 pistol. The firearm was disassembled down to the main components and packed in a hard-sided storage tote. A bag inside the tote contained seven loose .45 caliber rounds. Police checked Noel's criminal history and discovered he had been arrested and convicted on felony charges by the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms in Anchorage in 2007. Noel flew from Sitka but returned on April 6th when he was met by Sitka police officers at the Super 8 Motel and arrested for knowingly possessing a concealable firearm after having been convicted of a felony. During the arrest, officers observed assorted alleged drug paraphernalia, including a scale, cotton swabs, and a number of dime bags. Officers obtained a search warrant and subsequently seized the paraphernalia, along with a Springfield .45 caliber handgun and $1,600 in cash. Field testing of the substances in the dime bags was presumptively positive for methamphetamine and heroin. A search of Noel's box trailer and car parked in the Super 8 lot produced a Mossberg AR-15 assault-style weapon and several dime bags containing apparent drug residue. Noel is currently being held at the Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau. His trial has been scheduled for the week of July 5th in Sitka Superior Court. The Sitka grand jury indicted a second defendant this spring, also on firearms charges. 26-year-old Alex Michael Ireland was indicted on April 14th on one count of misconduct involving weapons for allegedly being in possession of a concealable weapon after having been convicted of a felony. Ireland is also facing a number of lesser charges related to wildlife violations. According to court records, Ireland first came to the attention of law enforcement when he called the Sitka Police Department in December 2021 to inquire about selling game meat. A records check by Alaska wildlife troopers indicated that Ireland had obtained resident hunting and fishing licenses in November and December of 2021 after claiming Alaska residency beginning the previous year in July of 2020. On further investigation, troopers learned that Ireland had been arrested twice in Alabama in early 2021 on felony drug possession and incarcerated for short periods both times. Troopers claim that Ireland's social media posts and information from his first employer indicate that he arrived in Sitka in June of 2021. When interviewed by troopers about these discrepancies, Ireland allegedly admitted to making false statements to obtain a resident hunting license in order to save money. He also is alleged to have admitted to taking two deer in Catlin Bay and Nakwasina Sound without purchasing the appropriate non-resident tags. Ireland's felony charge stems from a social media post he made in October 2021, which allegedly shows a video of him standing in the middle of Blue Lake Road firing a 9mm Glock pistol with an extended magazine into an embankment. Ireland allegedly told officers that he had another person buy the pistol for him at Orion Sporting Goods in the fall of 2021, as he was unable to do so as a convicted felon. Police obtained a search warrant for Ireland's residence aboard a fishing vessel and allegedly found the pistol hidden in the defendant's bunk. Based on the social media post, troopers also cited Ireland for discharging a firearm on a highway. Ireland was arrested and released on $1,500 bail. He's scheduled to face trial in Sitka Superior Court on the felony count in October of this year. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the Art of All Things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
The world is full of strange and unusual laws, and here are a few that caught my eye. In Samoa, it is illegal to forget your wife's birthday. In Turin, Italy, dog owners must walk their dogs at least 3 times a day. Milan actually requires every citizen to smile when they're out in public. Exemptions are made if you're headed to a funeral or visiting someone in the hospital. Breaking this law can lead to being arrested and fined up to $100. If you're heading to Eraclia, a small city and commune in the province of Venice, it is absolutely illegal to build sandcastles. Lawmakers say that sandcastles obstruct the passage. Noisy footwear in Capri, Italy is actually illegal. People have been both fined and arrested for shoes that don't fit the quiet bill. Also, make sure you are fully clothed when walking around this island, as wearing just a bikini or without a shirt will also lead to a fine. In Russia, Vladimir Putin just recently made it illegal to tell kids that gay people exist. Japan is the slimmest industrialized nation. In 2008, lawmakers in Japan passed the Metabo Law, yet there is no penalty or punishment in the law, hoping that it would stop the metabolic syndrome from affecting aging populations. Citizens there have to comply with a government-imposed waistline standard. The maximum waistline size for anyone age 40 and older is 85 centimeters, 33.5 inches for men, and 90 centimeters, 35.4 inches for women. Yet in Danish restaurants, you don't have to pay for your food unless you, by your own opinion, are full at the end of your meal. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Thursday. It is the second day of June, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:16. It won't set again until 10:59. That will give us 17 hours and 42 minutes of daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 36 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 33 degrees set in 1968, and our record high was 67 degrees set in 1984. We blazed right through that today, currently 74 degrees out at the airport. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 5:22 this evening here on the east side. That will be a 6.3-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 10:18 p.m. of 3.2 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will occur at 5:32 this afternoon and be 11.2 feet, followed by a low tide at 11 p.m. of 4.8 feet. Partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, partly sunny skies for tomorrow, and mostly sunny skies on Saturday, mostly sunny skies on Sunday. We're looking for calm winds through today and tonight and into tomorrow. West winds on Saturday to 10, mostly clear skies on Saturday night. And we're looking for highs in the mid-60s, lows around 50 overnight for the next few days. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Variable winds to 10 knots today, seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 3 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today, seas to 2 feet. And those conditions are expected to continue through tonight and tomorrow and Friday night and Saturday. Variable 10, seas to 2 feet from today through Saturday in the Shelikof. The Downtown Kodiak Revitalization Special Committee is meeting on Friday. That meeting will begin at 9 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. And that's where you can see the meeting web-streamed as well. For additional information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. They're having an exhibit change at the Kodiak History Museum. These are the last, you can see, Kodiak Collective. That's going through June 8th. And our next exhibit will be Making History Day by Day, Kodiak, Our Stories in the COVID-19 Pandemic. This exhibit is a reflection of the COVID-19 experience in Kodiak. It features stories, photos, memes, and more from Kodiak community members, plus special works by Ronald Jackson of Slim Jones, Inc., commissioned by the Kodiak History Museum. It was previously a traveling exhibit that was on display at the Best Western Inn, Darrell C. Wilson Auditorium, and Kodiak Public Library, but this is the first time the entire exhibit is on view at the same time. Previously, only parts of the exhibit were displayed. Again, that's starting on the 8th, and until then, you want to go in and see their present exhibit, Kodiak Collective, an art exhibit. Things to do at the Kodiak Public Library. Don't forget about the Community Beekeeping Project this summer. Weekly hive checks are every Tuesday at 1 p.m. You can give them a call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper. Call Ani at 486-8683. On Wednesdays, 3:30 p.m., the library hosts their Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Come see their garden party. Be part of the garden party on Friday. That's tomorrow between 1 and 3 p.m. Grab your grubbies and help plant the library's summer pollinator garden. Call Lori for more information at 486-8688. Also on Friday at 3:30 p.m., the library's escape room opens for the summer. Gather a couple of friends to use logic, instinct, and detective skills to figure out the clues and solve the puzzle. It's open to all ages. Children under 14 must be accompanied by an adult, though. Physical space is limited, so groups of three are recommended. Call the library at 486-8686 to reserve your spot. Also, Friday or Saturday at 11 a.m. is the first session of Campfire Stories and S'mores. Come outside behind the library, sit by the fire pit, and enjoy various stories and delicious s'mores with Ms. Ani. This session is for kids 6 to 11 and an adult. Call the library at 486-8686 to sign up. But again, that's next Saturday at 11 a.m. at the library.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.